It looks a little bit like this. This is from the airplane. Here's a couple more pictures that may give a better representation of New Mexico. It's a dry, barren land most of the time. Now, how many guys, let's just be honest with each other right now, okay? When I said I'm from New Mexico, how many of you guys thought, oh, I've been on a mission trip there one time, Mexico? Anybody? Okay. How many guys thought, oh, wow, they brought in a speaker from a different country. That's amazing. Anybody think that? Oh, good. Okay, good, good. How many of you guys, okay, now let's continue to be honest here. It's okay, even if they point and laugh. That's all right. How many of you thought, wow, I'll bet they only speak Spanish. That's amazing that he speaks English. Anybody? Okay, a few of you. That's all right. How many of you guys thought, let's get rid of a few more rumors about New Mexico. How many of you guys think that if you go to New Mexico, all you can eat is tacos? Anybody? Who doesn't know what a taco is? Weird. All right. How many of you guys think that people in New Mexico live in teepees? You're right on that one, actually. We all live in teepees. So sometime you'll have to come check out my teepee. It's pretty awesome. In the faraway land of Albuquerque, New Mexico, which, by the way, is one of the 50 states, for those of you who failed geography, we are one of the 50 states, we do speak English, we do sometimes eat tacos, not all the time. Andy probably ate a taco while he was there. Two tacos. Nice. Very nice. And so we have a good time down there in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I am married to a beautiful woman named Jennifer. Here's a picture of me and her. We've been married for about 3 years, and we actually just 3.5 weeks ago had our first baby. And her name is Emery Meredith. Here's a couple pictures of her. There she is. Here's my favorite one, the next one. I like it. You can't quite see it, but she's got a little baby mohawk right there. You see it? Yeah. That's the dad look at my mohawk look. That's what that is. So there we are. That's my little family right there, my wife and my daughter. And now let me tell you something I have in common with you guys. That is that I used to be a middle schooler, believe it or not, and I haven't always been this tall, okay? So I used to be shorter. I was not born this tall. And I used to be shorter. I used to go to sixth grade and seventh grade and eighth grade. Now, here's the thing. I know Andy's been telling you that I have pretty hair. And actually, he's probably the only person in my life that's ever told me that. So I'm very thankful for that. But here's the thing. It hasn't always been that pretty, okay? And let me just be real honest with you, because when I was actually in eighth grade, I knew that there was a problem. All right, and I could not figure out what it was, and I talked to my mom and my dad and school counselors, and nobody could give me an answer. So I finally decided, you know what, Mom, will you take me to the doctor? I really need to get this problem figured out. So thankfully, these medical doctors were able to put their heads together, did some scans, fancy instrument stuff on me. You know what they finally diagnosed me with? They said, Kevin, here's the problem. You're ugly. So they told me that I'm ugly. Okay, now I know you guys are going to think, oh, he couldn't have been that ugly. You know, I mean, come on. Now, I'm about to show you. Now, I brought a picture of my eighth grade yearbook picture. All right, now I don't want her to put it up yet, because the first time I show this to my youth group, I've never heard anyone laugh as long and as hard as they did. And it really hurt my feelings that I might start crying if that happened tonight. So you guys wouldn't laugh, would you? No. Okay, that's what I figured. I was like, you know what? It's New Jersey. They wouldn't laugh. You guys wouldn't laugh. Okay, so here's eighth grade Kevin. Pull it together. All right. Now that you guys laughed at me and I realize that I'm hated. Here's the thing. In Albuquerque, New Mexico, we had a billboard you can show this billboard. It says Ugly Kids on it, okay? Now, I have no idea what the point of the website is, uglykids.info. I don't know what it is. I don't even think it is a website anymore. But I drove by that billboard over and over and over, and I got to thinking about my eighth grade picture, and I thought, you know what? I fit right up there. So I put myself on that billboard. Check that out. I fit pretty good, don't I? That's kind of scary. Any guesses? Any guesses how tall I am? 6'4", 6'16". That's not a height. I'm sorry. 6'2". 4'6". That's right here. That's right there. Okay. 6' what? 6'3"? 6'1"? 8 feet tall. Who said that? Good job. Give yourselves a hand. That's wrong. That's wrong. Andy is 6'4". Andy is 6'4". I'm 6'5". Okay. So, yeah, who said 6'5"? Yeah, sure you did. No, you didn't. Whatever. You're like, oh yeah, totally. I totally get, whatever. You did not. Don't lie. Okay, so Andy's 6'4". I'm 6'5". We work with middle schoolers. I don't know if you guys like to tell Andy how tall he is all the time. My middle schoolers love to tell me, oh, you're so tall. I'm like, oh, thank you. I had no idea. Anyways, officially, we are not giants, okay? Now, giant is a medical term, I guess you could say, applied normally to people between the height of 7 to 8 feet. We are not there. We are not officially giants, okay? I'm sorry to crush your hopes and dreams there, but that's the case. Here's the thing. The average American male is about 5'9". Any 5'9ers in the room? Nice. There we go. Chris is an average American male right there, 5'9". And that means I am unaverage or abnormal or some would say weird or strange. Okay, that's all right. I'm a little taller. But you could understand how if the average height of an American man is 5'9", being 6'5" can sometimes have its disadvantages. Okay, let me give you a few examples of that. I'm frequently, when I'm at a store, frequently, you know, I'm at Walmart or something like that, in a department store, I'm frequently asked to take things off the top shelf or put them back on, all right? Like, there's some lady reaching really high, about to topple over, and she sees me. Oh, excuse me, sir, could you, up there? She can't even reach it, you know, and I'm like, yeah, sure, here you go, you know? Put it back up there for her. Do that all the time. I hit my head on light fixtures, on wind chimes, on door frames. It's not always that fun. I put clothes back on the top rack. I dust fans. I'm really good at dusting ceiling fans. I decorate for parties because no one can reach, you know, to hang the streamers up high. All of that fun stuff. One time, actually, speaking of Walmart, I walked around the corner. There was a little girl in a shopping cart. And she looked at me and screamed. At the top of her lungs, I walked around the corner and she went, ah! And I was like, am I that much of a freak? You know? Like, that really hurt my feelings. And again, I started to cry. I cry all the time, I guess. I don't know. I also went on a mission trip one time to Nicaragua. I had a couple names that I ended up leaving Nicaragua with. You can imagine here, okay, average American male, 5'9". 5'9" guy in Nicaragua is kind of tall. He's taller than most other people. So you can imagine big old 6'5" guy, white guy walking around in the middle of all the unwhite guys, you know. And I could have gone to the circus show there and they would have paid money to see me, you know, this big giant American guy. Well, they decided to call me names like one was Goliath, which means Goliath, okay? Another was Gigante, which means giant, okay? And then my favorite, and I'm sure your favorite, was Lapis Alto. Does anybody know what that means? Tall pencil, all right? Tall pencil, Lapis Alto. And I'm sure you guys will all be calling me that for the rest of the week. That's okay. Lapis Alto. So, As Andy was telling you guys, and as you saw, this weekend's theme is enjoying God. And I know that you guys came here to enjoy a lot of things, but I hope you guys will really, if you don't leave with anything else, leave with knowing more about God, being closer to God, and really understanding what it is to enjoy God. And we're going to be learning all about that this weekend. And I hope you guys will really be pondering that. And Andy called me and told me this theme a while back, a few months ago. And I just started thinking, man, where can I go with that enjoying God theme? That's a pretty broad theme. In fact, if you think about it, heaven, that's what we're going to do for the rest of eternity. So how is it that I can talk for three times about how we can enjoy God? Well, I did my best to choose kind of the top three things that we can enjoy about God. And tonight, the first thing that we're going to learn is enjoying God's presence. And if you're taking notes, you can write that down. Enjoying God's presence. Turn in your Bibles to Genesis chapter 18. Does everybody have their Bibles? Nice. Nice. Nobody has. Are there Bibles around the room? Does a leader know if there's Bibles somewhere around the room that we could pass out? Are there some in the back? I saw hymnals. Those don't work. Genesis 18, if you have your Bible. Are there any back there? Good. They're grabbing stacks of Bibles. Raise your hand if you need a Bible. Wow. Nice. Good. You guys are going to bring them for the rest of the Bible studies, right? Because usually when you study something, you want to have the book that you're trying to study. No, I'm not saying you're bad, terrible people. I'm just saying, next time, don't be bad, terrible people, okay? Bibles. All right, Genesis 18. Once you get your Bible, turn there. I'm sure you guys are getting fun new Bibles that have like new writing and different translations, and I'll be in the New King James Version, so if you get that, you'll be tracking with me. All right. Anybody else still need a Bible? Still need one right here in the middle. One in the back. One in the back. In the back. In the back. In the back. We still need one in the back. Are there any more Bibles? All the way in the back. Okay, there's one. And right over here, guy needs one. Genesis 18. Genesis 18. Do you still need one? You got one. Oh, it's in Spanish. Nice. I should be able to read that. I can't. Do you still need one back there? Do you still need one? He still needs one right back there. Okay. Nobody else? All right. Share with a neighbor. We are on a Bible shortage. That's okay. You guys brought them. Bring them next time. Genesis 18. Now, here we are talking about this topic of enjoying God's presence. I love that we sang that song, I Love Your Presence. And we sang it over and over. We sang that lyric over and over. I love your presence. And I hope that you guys can walk away today loving God's presence. Now, not God's gifts, as in presence, but God's presence being with us. And that's what we want to learn from the life of Abraham tonight. As I told you guys about, I know on a very small scale what it is to come down to someone else's level, into someone else's world. 6'5" me came down into 5'9" average American male's world, okay? Now, sometimes that's challenging. For the most part, I do pretty good with it. And on a very small scale, I know what it is to come down into someone else's world and to feel what other people are feeling. God knows it on a much larger scale. We're going to see that tonight through one of his appearances in the Old Testament to Abraham. And we're gonna see this as God appears to Abraham. Each night as we study, we're gonna look at a different person's life, different passage in the Bible, and learn what we can enjoy through their lives. Some are good examples of how to act, some are not so good examples of how to act. Abraham is a great example of how to act. God knows on a huge scale what it's like to come down to our level. If you think about it, the Creator, the one who made everything, became a creation. The owner, the master of the universe, became a baby that was born in a feeding trough. And that's what we celebrate when Christmas time rolls around. We just got done celebrating that, and so many times we lose track of how big a deal that is. God came down to our level, and we'll see that tonight in Genesis 18. Read with me, or not read with me, but follow along, verse 1 of Genesis chapter 18. It says, "Then the Lord appeared to him," speaking of Abraham, "by the terebinth trees of Mamre, as he was sitting in the tent door in the heat of the day." So God appeared to Abraham. They were, first of all, on your outline there, if you want to fill in the blanks, they were seeing eye to eye. They were seeing eye to eye. Now, seeing is a very important thing. In fact, I've had a couple experiences in the last couple days that reminded me of that. When I was first on my way here, which it's interesting that New Jersey has no snow, because New Mexico is usually the one that has no snow. We just got dumped on, and we have about a foot and a half of snow in Albuquerque, New Mexico. So, and that's what I was expecting to see out here. Instead, I see that at my hometown. I come out here, and he said it was going to be 65 degrees tomorrow. That's insane, January. But in Albuquerque, we just got a bunch of snow, and we're not used to it. We're used to warm weather, and like I showed you those pictures, the desert and dry heat. Well, I was driving to the gas station. I was running a little late because I had to get to the airport to fly out here. And it was about 9 o'clock at night. And I'm driving down the road, and there's a big puddle, and I'm in my truck. And it's a puddle. Drive through it. You don't even think about swerving around it, right? Well, it's about 14 degrees outside. And so I'm driving, hit the puddle. Big wave of water comes over my truck, and it freezes on contact when it hits my truck. So all of a sudden, I can't see anything, all right? And windows are rolled up. I've got my heater on, you know, everything's all toasty inside. All of a sudden, I can't see anything. I, of course, hit my brakes and start skidding sideways, not knowing where to skid because I don't know where the curbs are anymore or the median or anything like that. Finally, I come to a stop. I'm sideways in two lanes. Thankfully, nobody else was coming. Sideways in two lanes, and I can't clear my window or anything. So I end up, it's 14 degrees outside, roll down my window, hang my head out the window so I can drive and see where to go. And I finally pulled in the gas station. I made it okay, and my nose fell off along the way. So it was really cold. Eyesight was a very important part of that. In fact, I even realized that tonight, how important that is. We got here in the dark, in the foggy dark, and I was driving up the path here, and I'm like, oh yeah, it looks like I should probably keep driving right here. It turns out I drove right into the grass, and when you guys go outside, you'll probably be like, oh, it looks like some idiot drove into the grass right here. And you'll see like two big deep skid marks that ruin the grass. That's, I guess it's his and also my skid marks in the grass, all right? We feel very bad for that. Sorry, Streamside. Anyways, if I would have been able to see, it probably would have been a little easier. And the whole thing with seeing is that it's a big part of our communication. God also likes to communicate on a visual level, so that we can see eye to eye. Now, God doesn't always appear to us like he appeared to Abraham, but God does appear, and God appears in many different ways. And to Abraham here, what we're about to see is that he appeared face to face. And so our first thing that we see is that Abraham greets God. They get to see eye to eye, and Abraham greets God. Follow along with me starting again in verse 2. "So he lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, three men were standing by him." So three men appeared, and Abraham was right there. These three men showed up. "And when he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the ground and said, 'My Lord, if I have found favor in your sight, do not pass on by your servant. Please let a little water be brought and wash your feet. Rest yourselves under the tree, and I will bring a morsel of bread that you may refresh your hearts. After that, you may pass on by, inasmuch as you have come to your servant.' They said, 'Do as you have said.'" Verse 6, "So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah and said, 'Quickly, make ready three measures of fine meal, knead it, and make cakes.' And Abraham ran to the herd, took a tender and good calf, gave it to a young man, and he hastened to prepare it. So he took butter and milk
and the calf which he had prepared and set it before them, and he stood by them under the tree as they ate. So verse 1 says that Abraham was sitting at the front door, at the tent door. Here he is living in a tent, kind of like in New Mexico when we live in teepees. He lives in his tent, and he's sitting at the front door, and these three men appear. And when they appear, he does everything within his power to make them feel welcome. Did you see the words that were used there? Verse 2, it says he ran and bowed. Verse 6, he hurried or quickly make ready. Verse 7, ran, hastened to prepare it. So he runs, he gets water, he tells Sarah to start making cakes. He gets his servant preparing meat. He's running around, scurrying, doing his best to make these visitors feel very welcome. And you know what? At first, when these three guys arrived, Abraham probably had no idea that this was God and two angels. He probably had no idea. As far as he knows, it's just three guys. And a lot of people refer a verse in the New Testament to this Old Testament passage. The verse in the New Testament is Hebrews 13:2. You can write that down if you'd like to read it later on. Hebrews 13:2, it says, "Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing, some have unwittingly entertained angels." As far as Abraham knew, he was just greeting his guests. That's all he was doing. It was a part of the custom. And so he did his best to make them feel welcome. And in so doing, he was greeting God himself. That's the incredible thing about this meeting between Abraham and God. He wasn't doing it just because God was there, because he was trying to prove anything to God. He did it because he was a great guy. He loved the Lord and he wanted to share that love with others. Here's the cool thing. We have a very similar opportunity to do that tonight, tomorrow, the next day, to greet God, to make him feel welcome. Now, not that God is going to physically appear in this place, although he could. Not that he will, but so you ask, well, how is it that we would have an opportunity to do what Abraham did? Well, Matthew 25:40, Jesus said, "Inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me." Matthew 25:40. He says, he's talking to his disciples and he says, "Hey guys, remember that time when I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink? Or remember when I was hungry and you gave me some food? Or remember when I was in the hospital and you went and visited me? Or I was in prison and you went and saw me?" And they're like, "Jesus, no, we don't remember that. You were never lacking food. You were always multiplying bread all the time, you know? Why would..." And they're confused. And he says, "Inasmuch as you did it to the very least human being, the person who deserved it the least, you did it to me." And we have the same opportunity to do that for God every single day. While we're here in Pennsylvania, when we're back in New Jersey, when I go back to New Mexico to my teepee, I can do that. I can greet God. I can make him feel welcome. I can serve the Lord by doing my best to serve the people around me. And you know what's interesting is that it said when Abraham went to get the meat for these visitors, it says he grabbed a tender and choice calf. It wasn't like, it didn't say he ran and he got like the old falling apart cow that only had three legs in the back that nobody likes, you know, and all the other cows kick it. He didn't get that one, all right? He got the best one. He got the tender one, the one that he would have loved to eat. Maybe the firstborn, he got that, and he gave that to these visitors. He was a servant, and serving others is serving God. That's the great thing about it. Well, God doesn't just show up and meet with Abraham for fun. There's a reason behind it. God meets Abraham. That's the second thing. Look at verse 9. Then they said to him, "Where is Sarah, your wife?" So he said, "Here in the tent," or the teepee. And he said, "I will certainly return to you according to the time of life, and behold, Sarah, your wife, shall have a son." Sarah was listening in the tent door, which was behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, well advanced in age, and Sarah had passed the age of childbearing. Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, After I have grown old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord, being old also? And the Lord said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh, saying, shall I surely bear a child since I am old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? At the appointed time, I will return to you according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son. Verse 15, but Sarah denied it, saying, I did not laugh, for she was afraid. And he said, no, but you did. So God meets Abraham. What a meeting this must have been. This must have been pretty incredible to see God in human flesh before Jesus came in the New Testament. Thousands of years before, Abraham prepares this feast. He hangs out with these three dudes that just showed up to his house. But they turn out to be a little more than just three dudes that showed up. Because they start saying these crazy things like, hey, your wife is going to have a baby next time we come. And we're going to be back in a year and you're going to have a son. They're saying these things and it doesn't really make sense. They say that in verse 10. 9 months, Sarah's going to have a baby. Now, we read it. It says that Sarah was listening. And it says that she was listening, and when she heard it, she laughed. Do you guys know why she laughed? What was funny about that? When I found out that my wife was going to have a baby, I didn't laugh. I was like, woohoo, you know, I was excited. But I didn't laugh like, yeah, right, that's a funny joke. But what do you guys think? Does anybody have any idea why Sarah laughed? She knew that she wasn't pregnant. Okay, any other ideas why she laughed, why that's funny? She was too old. Exactly. Did you see what it said? Verse 11, now Abraham and Sarah were old, well advanced in age, and Sarah had passed the age of childbearing. Here's a couple verses for you guys to read again when you get back to your cabins. Hebrews 11, 11 through 12. It also says that Sarah and Abraham were too old, but I love how it words it. It says, Hebrews 11, 11, it says, by faith, Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed, and she bore a child when she was past the age. But then I love verse 12. It says, therefore, from one man, speaking of Abraham, and him as good as dead, were born as many as the stars of the sky in multitude. Now, this guy was really old. The Bible says he was as good as dead. I hope nobody ever describes me like that, you know. Oh, Kevin? Yeah, he's as good as dead, you know? That's pretty harsh. That's a pretty harsh description. But that's how the Bible, that's how the author of Hebrews saw him. He was as good as dead. There's no way. It is completely humanly impossible for Sarah, who had gone past the age of childbearing, and Abraham, who was as good as dead, to have a kid. There's no physical way. Have you guys ever seen somebody that's really, that looks that old? Like, oh, they're probably going to die soon, you know? Now, we don't want to be mean, and we would never tell them that. Like, hey, I got you a hope you don't die soon card. You know, I'm feeling really bad because you look like you're going to die soon. Don't do that, okay? Don't do that. On my 21st birthday, I got a card that said, congratulations for not dying yet. And I was like, thanks. I've really been trying not to do that. So it's interesting because these visitors say a baby is coming. It's physically impossible. There is no way a baby is coming. So Sarah, she's listening. She's eavesdropping. She hears. She laughs. Says she laughed within herself. She didn't die laughing out loud, but she laughed within herself. Like in her mind. You guys know sometimes we have conversations with ourselves. She was having one of those. Like, yeah, right. I don't know what those guys are talking about. Have a baby, whatever, you know, and she's laughing. She's telling herself jokes about how stupid these guys are or whatever, you know, laughing to herself. Well, this is God. God knows whether it's inside of us or outside. And God hears her laugh and says, hey, Sarah, why'd you laugh? She's like, I didn't laugh. Don't know what you're talking about. She laughed, you know, points at the cow behind her. And she completely denies it. Do you see what happens? Her disbelief that God could do something in her life led to further sin. She went on to lie. She went on to try to cover up her disbelief. No, it wasn't me. I didn't laugh. She immediately went to lying to cover up the sin of disbelief that was in her life. You know what I find interesting is that 1 year later, their son would be born. And they would name him Isaac. And Isaac has an interesting meaning. The name Isaac means laughter. And back in Genesis chapter 17, God told Abraham he was going to have a son. And it says that he fell on his face laughing. He thought that was so funny. And now here, chapter 18, Sarah laughs when she hears that she's going to have a baby. And then God says, hey guys, hey, I came up with a great name for your son. How about laughter? There's a good one. Because for the rest of this young man's life, every time they called him, hey Isaac, and they would think of this laughter, they would remember, man, I laughed when God said that this little kid would be here. What a reminder. What a sobering reminder. And what a reminder of God's sense of humor as well. That he loves to show us that he is so much bigger than what we think is possible. And I hope that we can see that this weekend. So God and Abraham got to see eye to eye. Abraham greeted God. God met with Abraham. Well, the second part of this is that Abraham and God are speaking friend to friend. They're seeing eye to eye. Now they're speaking friend to friend. And that's a great thing. Communication is an incredible thing. It comes in a lot of different forms. We email. We text people. We instant message people. Whatever it may be. There's sign language. There's lots of things. Now, all of these things are good for communication, but not all of them work completely to communicate our message. In fact, I even read about a fire safety pamphlet that was, it was put out originally in English, and then it was transferred to an Arab language, all right? And they translated it to this Arab language, and it didn't quite turn out exactly what they were going for. Here's how it read in the English language. It says, never jump straight out of a window, lower yourself onto cushions, etc. Now this is, you know, if your house is on fire, that would make sense. Don't jump straight out, right? Well, they transferred it into this Arab language, and it seems like the words got mixed up a little bit. It says, this is in the different language, never jump out of a window straight. Put yourself on a donkey and come down. Now, what happened, I guess, is that the English word cushion, when they translated it, this Arab word cushion and the Arab word for donkey are almost exactly the same, and they mixed up a letter so that it turned, instead of cushion, it came out donkey. Can you imagine these Arab people like, my house is on fire. Where's a donkey? You know, I got to get out of here. And they're looking for donkeys all over the place. Give me your donkey. I got to jump out the window. The fire safety pamphlet said not to do without a donkey. I got to get out the window, right? Didn't quite make enough sense. Didn't really work out too well. Well, sometimes communication works great. Sometimes it doesn't. But when you can speak friend to friend, when you can see eye to eye, it helps a lot more. In fact, according to a recent communication study, only 7% of communication is made up by the actual written words. Only 7% of communication. Because even more than that, tone of voice is 38% of communication. And even more than that, 55% of communication is made up of body gestures. Have you guys ever seen people like to talk with their hands? Kind of like I do, but even more. Have you guys ever seen it? Like, hey, woo, yeah, my name's Kevin, yeah. And they're like, you know, trying to prove their point while moving their arms and hands all around. And you're like, could you stop doing that, you know? Have you guys, in fact, sometimes maybe you guys do this, talk with your hands while you're on the phone, as if the person on the other line can see you, you know? Like, well, yeah, the other day we were over there and like, I don't have to do that, you know, but it feels weird not to, you know. Well, all of these things, our body gestures, our tone of voice, all of these things make up communication. Well, we have God's written word. And according to this study that they did on communication, we only have 7% of what God was fully trying to communicate to us. If we had been there and we got to actually sit and hear Paul the Apostle preach, that would be amazing. We could see his body gestures and hear his tone of voice and also see his write down his words and hear his words. All of those are important things. Abraham had something very special. He was speaking friend to friend with God. And that's where our first part comes in. God informs Abraham. He informs him of what his future plans are. Starting again in verse 16. It says, then the men rose from there and looked toward Sodom, and Abraham went with them to send them on the way. And the Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham what I am doing? Since Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. For I have known him in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that they keep the way of the Lord to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has spoken to him. Verse 20, and the Lord said to him, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grave, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry against it that has come to me. And if not, I will know. Then the men turned away from there and went toward Sodom, but Abraham still stood before the Lord. Some interesting words come to my mind when I read this passage. Jesus, when he was in the upper room with his disciples, right before he was arrested and taken to the cross and murdered, he said some pretty interesting words to his disciples. John 15:15, he says, no longer do I call you servants, for a servant does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends, for all things that I heard from my Father, I have made known to you. And that's the great thing about God's presence, is that we don't have to worry that God is going to strike us dead when we pray, you know, because of some sin in our lives. We don't have to worry because God has called us his friends. Now, let me make sure that you get this right. God does not like the sin in our lives. He's not okay with it, but he has called us friends. And he has said, you guys don't have to refer to me as some high and lofty master anymore, because I've made known to you my plans. A master doesn't do that to his servant, but a friend does that for his friend. And Jesus said, I've come down and I want to be your friend. I want to be your best friend. And so he calls these disciples his friends. And Abraham has a pretty interesting title found three times in the Bible. It's called Friend of God. Abraham is referred to that. Man, if anybody calls me anything, I hope that I'm referred to as a friend of God. When I die, I hope people can say, that guy loved the Lord. He was about serving God. That's what he loved to do. And you can read in different passages, 2 Chronicles, James, Isaiah, where Abraham is referred to as the friend of God. Well, it's no wonder he receives his title, because God tells him his plans. In fact, he tells him what he's about to do and why he's about to do it. Look again at verse 20. He says, and the Lord said, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grave, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry against it that has come to me. So he says, I'm about to head down to Sodom and Gomorrah and destroy it. And here's why. Because I've heard the outcry of their sin. Now, maybe you're thinking, well, what kind of outcry is he talking about here? Are these literal cries coming from these cities of Sodom and Gomorrah? Are these prayers from good people within the cities? What kind of cries is this? Well, think back. Maybe you guys remember the story back in Genesis chapter 4. Think back when Cain killed his brother Abel. And it says that God spoke to Cain and said, hey, Cain, where's your brother? And he says, I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper? He gets really sassy with God. You know how that is, right? Don't do that, by the way. And so he says, I don't know. I don't know where he's at. And you remember what God says? It says, the voice of your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. Your sin will always find you out. And whether or not the person next to you, the person behind you, your parents, your principal, your teacher, anybody else ever knows, maybe you're a really good actor. Maybe you conceal your sin and nobody has any idea. God knows. He already does. He knows the mistakes you've already made. He knows the mistakes you'll make in the future. You can't hide it. And that's why it's so important to be honest with him, because he sees it all. And it stinks, literally. God hates it. In fact, in this case, the sin of these people were crying out to God. Its actions, its thoughts, its consequences. Sin stinks. 2 Corinthians 2:15 says, "For we are to God the fragrance of Christ." The life of a Christian living for God smells good to God. Like your mom's cookies when you go home, you know? You're like, ooh, that smells good, right? Well, to God, when we are serving Him, He loves it. But when we're living for ourselves, God, it stinks to God, literally. He hates it. And so this life of selfishness is a terrible way to live. God is sick of the stench. And it's so sad sometimes to see people that are okay with living the way that they're living. They continue to live in the sin that they're living in their lives. And God hates it. It's time to get rid of it. So God informs Abraham of His plan. But how's Abe going to respond? Well, that's the second part. Abraham implores God. He implores God. Basically, that word implore means to beg for urgently. To get on your knees. To be begging for something. Let's see how Abraham does that. Starting in verse 23. "And Abraham came near and said, 'Would you also destroy the righteous with the wicked? Suppose there were 50 righteous within the city. Would you also destroy the place and not spare it for the 50 righteous that were in it? Far be it from you to do such a thing as this, to slay the righteous with the wicked, so that the righteous should be as the wicked. Far be it from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right?' So the Lord said, 'If I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I will spare all the place for their sakes.' Then Abraham answered and said, 'Indeed, now I who am but dust and ashes have taken it upon myself to speak to the Lord. Suppose there were 5 less than the 50 righteous. Would you destroy all the city for the lack of 5? So he said, 'If I find there 45, I will not destroy it.'" And he goes on. And you guys can continue to read how Abraham talked God down finally to where God finally agreed that if he could find 10 righteous people in these cities, he wouldn't destroy them. Can you picture the scene? Abraham is begging God, "God, far be it from you. There could be righteous people live in that city. You're going to destroy it, huh? Well, how about this?" Abraham comes up with a plan. Abraham says, "God, what if you find 50 people? 50 righteous people who are serving you, would you still destroy the city just because with those 50 people? Would you kill them also?" God says, "Fine, okay. I won't kill them if I find 50 people." Abraham's like, "Sweet, all right. Hey, God, what? I don't think you can find 50, let's be honest. What if you find 45, all right? 45 people, would you still destroy those people with those cities?" God says, "Okay, fine. I won't destroy the city if I can find 45 righteous people." All right, good. He gives God a high five, right? Woo, all right. God, one more thing. What if you find 40, all right? I don't, 45 is a little too high. What? How about 40? If you find 40 people, could you not destroy it? God says, "All right, fine. I won't destroy it." All right, good, good. Here's an idea. How about 30, all right? I still don't think you can find 40. How about 30? 30 people, that's it. You don't have to destroy it for 30 people. All right. God says, "I won't destroy it." All right, sweet. Hey, God, one more thing. I don't think you find 30. How about 20? Okay, that's it. All right, 20. 20 people. And will you not destroy the city for 20 people? God agrees to that. And then one last time he says, God, I know I said the last time was the last time, but one last time. 10 people. All right, 10 people, that's it. That's all I'm ever going to ask you. 10 people. If you can find 10 righteous people in that city, will you quit destroying? Will you not destroy the city? God finally agrees. He's talked him down from 50 to 10 people. He's been begging God. As far as we know, this went on for hours as he talked to the Lord, as he begged God, "Please don't destroy the city," for 50, for 45, 40, 30, 20, 10. And he gets him down to 10, and he says, "Okay, fine. Please don't destroy the city for 10 people." Abraham begins to plead with God. He's face to face with God, and he begins to plead with him. This is praying. You guys may know what praying for someone else is defined as. It's called intercessory prayer. When you intercede for somebody, that means you're asking something for them on their behalf. So Abraham was interceding for these people. But verse 16 says that the two men that were with God went on their way. They started heading to Sodom. And we read in the first verse of chapter 19 that the two angels came to Sodom in the evening. If you continue to read chapter 19, you find out that God ended up destroying these cities. Only four people made it out: Lot, his wife, and their two daughters. His wife was obedient. God destroyed her as well. Three people lived: Lot and his two daughters. They ended up living in a cave. So we look at this story and we think, well, that's got to be really frustrating for Abraham. You know, he prayed that God would not destroy those cities. And let me ask you this. Since he asked God not to destroy the cities and God destroyed the cities, does that make Abraham a failure? Think about it. Some people would say, well, yeah. I mean, he asked for it and God didn't do it. God didn't listen to his prayers. That's not the case at all. God's got a plan. And you know, a lot of times we'll pray for something and it doesn't happen the way we prayed for it. It doesn't happen the way that we planned. But it's a part of God's plan. Abraham prayed and he obeyed. And that's all God asked from him, and that's all God asks from you. He says, talk to me. Tell me what you need and obey me. That's all you have to do. It's a very clear direction that God has given us. And so Abraham does just that. He implores God. James 5:16, I love this verse. At the end it says, the effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. It's powerful. When we pray, when we spend time praying for others and our needs. And so I encourage you not to give up on those prayers. God is near. His presence is with us. He sees the good and the bad. And God is on our level. That's the amazing thing about the Creator, is that he has become one of us. He's felt the good. He's felt the bad. And he knows your joys. He knows the hard parts too of life. He's been there. And Here's a challenge that I want to give to you guys once you get back home. Something I did, one thing that my youth pastor actually challenged me when I was younger, and it sounded crazy to me, and it's going to sound crazy to you guys as well. But I remember him telling me this: Kevin, do this, go home, close your door in your room, and pull up a chair. You sit on your bed or some other comfortable place, pull up a chair in front of you and invite Jesus to sit down and talk to him like he's your friend. Okay, now you're thinking, I don't know, that's kind of weird. I'm not really into talking to air, you know. I don't know about that, right? And I got to admit, when I first did it, it was a little weird, you know. I just had my empty office chair sitting right there talking to it, you know. But when you start to realize that Jesus is as real as that chair sitting right in front of you, his presence is there with you, he is all around us, it will change the way you talk to God. And I hope that it would change the way you spend time in prayer, that it wouldn't just be talking to some guy that you can't see, but instead you would recognize that the presence of God is with you in this very place, tonight, in your bedroom when you go home, at school, when you're being tempted, God is there. In your classrooms, everywhere you go, God's presence is there. And so I encourage you, go home sometime, well, not now, but once you get home, close your door so nobody thinks you're weird, all right? And do just that. Sit on your bed, pull up a chair, do something, and then pull up a chair and say, hey, Jesus, hey, come take a seat. I want to hang out. And talk to him. Now, it sounds weird. In fact, you know what I did? I think I might have actually called God dude when I talked to him, all right? Now, I don't think I've ever done that before, but I said, hey, dude, I don't know if I should say that. Yeah, okay, you know? To talk to him like he's your friend. Tell him the good. Tell him the bad. Be honest with him. He knows it all. You're not hiding anything. Here's the great thing. You know, sometimes when you've got like a really dark secret and you're scared to tell somebody because you know their reaction, like they're going to, you know, freak out or scream or have a heart attack. because of how terrible you've been or something you've done. God will never have a reaction like that. He already knows. You're not telling him anything that he doesn't know. You're not going to shock him. So be honest with him. God loves to hear your prayers. And so, I figured a perfect way to end the night is to do just that. To enjoy God's presence. And so what we're going to do here in just a minute is get together with a leader in each group. And you guys are going to separate into small groups, maybe 10, 5 people, however many, with a leader. And you're going to spend some time in intercessory prayer. You remember what we talked about? Abraham interceded for these people. And he prayed and he begged the Lord. And here's what I want you guys to do. Don't pack up quite yet. Listen up right here. What I want you guys to spend some time praying is that God would reveal himself this weekend. That we would begin to sense his presence. That we would really understand how to enjoy God. Because here's the thing. A lot of you already have a little bit of an idea of how to enjoy God. You've made a decision already to follow Christ. Most of you. That's great. But I'll bet there's also some people in this room who've never made a decision to follow God. They don't even think that they need him. Maybe you came here because you were looking forward to snow. And oh well for that. But you came for a fun weekend. Well, I hope that you take much more away than just, oh, this was fun and that was fun. But man, God did something in my life. So here's my challenge to you. If you have a relationship with the Lord, pray that God would reveal himself even more. Pray that he would reveal himself to other people as well that really need it this weekend. But maybe you don't have a relationship with God. I ask that you would just talk to God. That's all prayer is. And ask him to prove that he's real. Because he'll do that. And he'll change your life. So right now, here's what I want you guys to do. Leaders, why don't you guys kind of just spread up around the room? And students, you guys can split up. Go with leaders. This is not hangout time. This is hangout with the Lord time, all right? So spend the next about 5 minutes in prayer, and then we'll close right after that.